We said we were talking about Yerushalayim and Binyamin. If you look at the map, you see that Binyamin is right above Yehuda. We said that the boundary comes down on the valley, and most of the times you have natural, there were tried to be natural boundaries. The boundary between Binyamin comes down the valley on the side of Route 1, and it follows it around behind Mattersdorf. It comes to Ramat Eshkol and makes a right. It comes up. It comes up behind, like the two bus goes behind the Beis Hamikdash, on the other side of the wall. But then a narrow, narrow strip goes into the Temple Mount. And that, in that strip, is the Mizbeach. And that strip then, and again, the boundary isn't exactly how much, there's a machlokas, but that is because the Beis Hamikdash should not just be in one tribe. So that you see that Binyamin is right above. That means that right now you're sitting where? In what Shevet? In Yehuda. If you go to Ramot, in what Shevet would you be sitting? Binyamin. Alright. Now, we then go in Pasuk, the next Pasuk, in Pasuk Tav Beis, we go to Bnei Yosef. Now, Bnei Yosef are Ephraim and Menashe, the two sons of Yosef. Yaakov gives them a blessing that they are considered to be like his sons. When in the laws of inheritance, does anybody know anything about the laws of inheritance? What do you know? Never nod your head, it's bad business. What do you know?
The oldest son gets a double portion.
The oldest son gets a double portion. And what Yaakov said was that for this purpose, and the oldest son also has other kinds of rights. And that includes the kingship, and the priesthood should go to the oldest son. But the priesthood was given to the tribe of Levi, and the kingship was given to the tribe of Yehuda. But Yosef gets the double portion, which means that he has two tribes that are counted. And so when we count 12 tribes for things that deal with the land, we count Ephraim and Menashe. That's also why on Friday, or when the father gives the blessings to his son, he says what? Ephraim and Menashe, that you should have an extra blessing, and that you should have that blessing of Yaakov. So it starts off and it introduces them as a unit, Bnei Yosef. Now they come to a place called Luz. Luz is Beit El. Okay? If you look at your map, we should be able to see Beit El. Where is Beit El? We should be able to see it. Yes, right underneath the word Binyamin. It says Beit El. And again, what do we see in that in terms of a problem? Beit El is considered to be in
Binyamin, right? No?
In Ephraim. It says it's in Ephraim. The map draws it as if it is in Binyamin. But Beit El is in Ephraim. It's in the tribe of Yosef. Okay, Beit El is mentioned in this coming week's Parsha also. Okay, and according to the Medrash, it is in the same place. That it's basically the same place. Beit El is inhabited beforehand by the Chitim, and it's called Luz. Now they have sent out scouts.
What's called Luz?
Beit El and Luz is another name. Just like Hebron is Kiryat Arba. It has a different name. Now we have Hebron and Kiryat Arba are like a suburb of one. But Luz was the name of Beit El. Now when they send out the scouts do not see anything because Beit El was in a valley, a hidden valley, and the only entrance to Beit El was through a bush, a cave behind a bush. So you could not see where the entrance was. But the scouts waited and they saw somebody coming out. And they approached this fellow and said, "Excuse me, could you direct us towards the city?" And he said, "Nothing." But they did not just ask nicely. They implied that if he did not cooperate, he would be killed. And if he did cooperate, he would not be killed. And again, we have to remember that the rule of the time was everybody knew that Bnei Yisrael were coming in and that they were going to be driven out. Some people chose to leave. Some people chose not. This person was given this choice, and he did not answer then. But he did point. And because he pointed, they didn't kill him or his family, and they let him go. Because he provided that information. Now, this is in Kaf Beis to Kaf Zion. The particular pasuk is Kaf Dalet, Kaf Gimel, Kaf Dalet, 24.
What parak are we?
The first parak. We haven't moved real fast. We keep saying we're slow. My wife would finish. She'd be already finishing now. You would have a seum. No. Baruch Hashem. And he points out the city. According to the Midrash, the scouts actually attack the city and capture it, and they do save him. Okay? Now, the question is, why did they save this fellow?
Because he helped them, and he could have...
Well, he didn't really help them. They convinced him that either he should do it or they would kill him.
Yeah, but he still had the option of going and telling people. I mean, he could have...
He didn't have an option of going and telling people. He was outside the city. He was captured outside the city. They said, either show us or we kill you now, on spot.
He could have,
but I'm not sure that would have been any loyalty because they knew that the Bnei Yisrael were going to capture and destroy the city. That was a given in terms of how they perceived the situation. The Chiti, the Amori, the Prizi, the Rugashi, all of these tribes that were there knew that Bnei Yisrael was going to attack and defeat them. They had some hope that maybe Bnei Yisrael would sin and they wouldn't. But essentially they knew that. Why should he be rewarded? And the answer is, anytime somebody does something, whether it's Rishma or Lo Rishma, whether it's because of good intent or because of other intent, self-serving intent, the person should be and is rewarded. The action provides a reward, and that's true for this person, and it's true for us, and it's true as a general principle. The person who destroyed the temple, Nebuchadnezzar, reigned for 4 years in peace. The Medrash says, why did he reign for 4 years?
You mean after the destruction?
There was 4 years that he had an easy time. Why did he have 4 years?
Hashem wanted him.
And he had children that, that converted and became teachers, teachers and rabbis in Israel. Person who destroyed the Beis Hamikdash. The Medrash says, he was, before he became the emperor, he was the chief scribe. He was the one in charge of the Secretary of State, chief PR person, whatever. And they were writing a letter to the people of Israel. And he wrote, he went out for lunch. Could have been coffee break, could have been lunch, I don't know. He wasn't there. And his people wrote to the people, they had a salutation on the letter. It said, to the people of Israel, to the king of Israel, to the God of Israel. And he comes back and says, and they sent it out without his approval. They had a deputy who said, all right, sounds good, send it out. And he came back and he said, no, 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 this is wrong. And he went after the messengers. He took 4 steps to try to catch the messengers. And he said, no, they're already gone. I can't do it. But he took 4 steps. What was wrong that he took the 4 steps that he'd given a reward for?
He wanted to change God to first God of Israel. Then
it needed to be the proper order. The respect for God was there in his mind. So even though it wasn't, he didn't do anything, but he tried. Because of that, there was a reward. So this person is saved. He goes and he builds, and again, it's not clear, Pasuk Kaf Vav, what's it about. Vayechish Eretz HaChitim, and he goes to the land of the Chitim. And the Chitim are, again, a large land, some of which is in Eretz Yisrael, some of which is in what is now Jordan, Saudi Arabia, Iran. Vayiven Ir, and he built a city. And he called its name Luz. V'hushmo ad ayom hazeh. And that's the name of the city until this day. Why is that of any interest? And the Medrash, the Chazal tried to understand that. They give him an explanation saying that Luz is a city in which the Malach HaMavis does not have any control. It is a city on the other side of the river Sabata. Where that is, nobody knows, but there are a lot of midrashim about that. There's a medrash about somebody, and according to the medrash, again, it becomes a city in which the 10 tribes go. It's a medrash about somebody who goes there. They have a rule, you don't lie in this city. And he's married to this woman. Somebody knocks on the door. He doesn't want to tell him where she's at. She's in the bathroom or showering or something. So she says she's not there, and because of that, there's punished. He's punished. But again, the story about the city of Luz becomes important in the Midrashim. Why it's here is the question the Midrashim try to answer. We now go to Kaf Zayin, and we continue with the concept of Lo Harish, not inheriting, not properly driving out the people from the different tribes. And it lists different places that Manasseh does not drive them out. If you look at your map, some of these places are still, not still, they've been resettled and used the same names. So you have Beit Shan, which is on your map right across from the, on the right, to the right of the name of Manasseh. Does everybody have a map? Okay, does anybody not have a map? Is anybody awake who does not have a map?
I brought my map. I'm awake, but I have a map.
Okay, good. You have Beit Shan. That's in about the area where the current city of Beit Shan is. Beit Shan is a city that much later becomes a Roman city. There is a Roman amphitheater, and there's a lot of antiques from that, antiquities, yeah, that's what we wanted to say. Antiquities in Beit Shan from the early Roman period in Israel. And if you go up to Tveria and you go through the Bikar Road, the road that goes up parallel to the Jordan River, you'll come to Beit Shan. It also lists some place called Megiddo, which also on the map appears to be in Yisachar, but it's not. It's in Manasseh, and that's also roughly in the same area. If you go up, it's in that area. Yokneam is also part of Manasseh. These are the cities that may or may not be in the same place, but there are current cities. Megiddo appears to be in about the same place that the Megiddo of the Tanakh, Megiddo that we're talking about here, is. They didn't capture these cities, and they left them. You see Zvulun, which is above Manasseh, above Yisachar. It is does not capture all of the cities. It lists some of them, and it says at the end of Pasuk Lam, at the end of Pasuk 30, Vayu Lamas, and they became for taxes. And again, the Mephoshim say there is an indefinite pronoun in that statement. Does everybody know what an indefinite pronoun is? Is there anybody who doesn't know what an indefinite pronoun is? You never met one. You have two people that are discussed in the Pasuk. One is Zvuin, and one is the Yoshveh of Kitron. And then it says they were left there. And it says, Vayeshev HaKnani, the Knani stayed in that area, and they were to them a tax. To whom was paid the tax, and who paid the tax? Indefinite pronoun means we don't know how to connect the they, or the he, or the them, to the noun. We don't know which noun it applies to. So again, the Midrash says that at the beginning, the Kanani paid tax to Zvulun, But at the end, Zvulun paid tax to the Kanani. We now go to Asher. Yisachar and Zvulun, by the way, are tribes that act together. Yisachar is a tribe that's devoted to Torah. Zvulun supports them. Zvulun also has across to the Mediterranean, they have seaports. And Zvulun is a seafaring tribe. So how they cut through exactly with the map, I'm not sure. But they do have a port, and they do a lot of commerce, and they support Yisachar. And Yisachar is not mentioned in these battles. However, because of all these things that are setting up here, where they don't drive them out, we'll see that much of the later Shoftim will deal with fights that occur in this area. So you'll see that this is an area that is fought. You'll see that there's also some fighting in Aza much later, but that the fighting that takes place in a lot of the rest of Shoftim will occur in this area. There'll be fights down below, and it depends on the early Shoftim is almost entirely in this area. We were at Asher is, you can see that Asher is along the coast, and again the Pasuk wishes to emphasize that they did not drive the people out. But if you look at the cities that we're talking about that belong to Asher, we have Akko, which is a city in Israel now. We have Sidon, which is a city in Lebanon now. And we have the coast that appears to go up past the top of, you see on the top of the map, they have Sidon. It appears to probably go up a little bit past Sidon in terms of the border. When we finish the Navi, we'll talk a little bit about current events. That becomes important also to understand the current events. There's a natural river. There's a river that was probably the top of the border at the time of the Shoftim. Naphtali is along the Kinneret, and again, they didn't drive everybody out. The Beit Shemesh that's mentioned here is not the Beit Shemesh that's down below near Yerushalayim. Beit Shemesh is a name that we have several times, and we will encounter the Beit Shemesh here in Naphtali later on. But you see that Naphtali is, what cities are in Naphtali? Just looking, what would you say? What current cities are in Naphtali?
Current
cities.
Tveria.
Tveria.
Tzfat.
Probably Tzfat. Tzfat might be in Zvulun, but probably Tzfat. Meron, you can see where it says Meron. That's probably the Meron now. Tzfat is right below that. So again, from the map, we don't know exactly, but that's the area between Zvulun and Naphtali. And Naphtali goes all the way up, well, not all the way up, but goes up past what's on this map. There's another sea, another lake. That's the Chula Valley. The Chula Valley was another lake that was drained by the Jewish National Fund about 70, 80...
Why?
90 years ago. Because it had a lot of malaria and it had a lot of very good land. And that was where, because when Jews came back to Israel in the 1900s, That was one of the places they bought land, and many of the people died. If you go up, there are several museums in that area that go through about the difficulties that the families had. There's a place called Rosh Pina that's sort of between these two things, where it says Chatzor. Chatzor we will encounter later on, but a little bit below Chatzor is a city called Rosh Pina. That was the city that was established by the people that lived close to this valley, and there had a lot of malaria, and so they moved out to Rosh Pina. But that's an important part of the history and how the land was settled. Dan, we talked about. Dan is above that second lake, above the Chula Valley. Dan wasn't able to capture its whole area. They were put up into the mountains, and they had a great difficulty. Because of that, Dan splits up. There's a city called Tel Dan, which is a national park now. In that park, you can see the city that was built by the tribe of Dan.
Really?
And you can see how it's up all the way up north. You go yashar, 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 and then keep going.
You mean
this no. Yeah, yashar, 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 yashar. All the way up, Tel Dan. But we see the city, the old city, and we can see when it talks about having the entrance to the city where the court sat, you can see how the entrance of the city is built. You can also see there, we'll see much later, that when the tribes of Israel split off, there was a person by the name of Yerovam. He builds an idol. He builds an idol. One place he builds the idol is in that city. And you can actually see the remains of the Mizbeach that he built. But because they were not successful, they send a group down to settle a different part. They settle on the Mediterranean. That becomes another part of Dan. That becomes another gush, another portion of Dan. That's why the area of Tel Aviv is called Gush Dan. That's the name of the larger area. You have an area called Mata Benyamin, for example. These are regional councils that they call their governments for the areas where you don't have city governments, or you have small cities. These are the ones that are responsible. But you have these names that are there. So you see how that is the split there.